There was a guy who used to put in a very, very long work day. And he'd leave for work at 5 o'clock in the morning, and he gets back home at 9 o'clock at night, and the next night he gets back home at 10 o'clock at night. And finally, one night, it's Thursday night, he opens the door, and his wife looks at him, and she says, "Everything okay?" And he walks in like a zombie and says, "Can't talk." He walks and he says, "Sofa." He's looking for the sofa. He falls on the sofa. And his wife walks up and says, "Everything okay?" She says, So she goes to the kitchen and she gets him a glass of water. She puts in some ice. She says, "Honey, have a drink." He says, "Can't drink." And he's lying there. And he's lying there. And the phone rings. And she goes and answers the phone. And a few seconds later, she walks up to him and she says, I really don't mean to bother you, but there's someone on the line for you. He says it's your client. He says it's about a deal. What should I tell?" So he leans over and he slowly takes the phone from her. And he says, "Yes." And a second later, his wife sees him jumping out of the sofa. And he says, "John, it's so good to hear your voice." "Really? Sure, we can close. 15 minutes, I'll be over. 15 minutes, we can close the deal." He hangs up the phone, he turns to his wife, he says, "That was John. We made the deal. You can't imagine how big this is." And he starts going out to the door. And he opens the door, and he feels something in his back. And he turns around, and he sees an icy glare. And he says, "What's wrong?" He looks at her, and she's looking at him, and she says, and he says, "Something's wrong, right? You're not too happy. What's wrong?" And she smiles at him, and she says, "Oh, honey, there's nothing wrong, but you just taught me what kind of greeting I can expect from you on your hardest day. Have a safe trip. Because if I come home, if you walk through that door any night from now on, and I don't get the greeting that John got on the phone, then I understand John is more important than me. Because for John, you jumped out of that sofa and you were with it. Hey, John, yeah, how's everything going?" So I'm not less than John. We have to remember that one of the most important messages that we're supposed to be giving one another in marriage is that you're number one. If you remember, that was the first class we had in Binyan HaBayit. We even labeled it on the web. You're number one. That's the message that everyone is responsible to give to one another. When Shlomo HaMelech describes the relationship between Am Yisrael and Hashem, how does he call the Jewish people? The man calls the girl, "Achat hi yonati tamati." My beloved, my dove is singular. There are none like her. And very often, the spouse is last in line. And we have to remember that it has to be the exact opposite. It's a question of focus. It's a question of, am I writing emails, chatting, as I'm talking to my spouse on the phone? It's a question of, how much attention am I giving? It's a question of eye contact. Am I looking at the person? Am I giving him the attention? Am I showing him that I care? So people sometimes say, "What do you mean? She's my wife." Yeah, exactly. She's the most important person. We saw that when King David was going to war, so there was civil war. King David had the tribe of Yehuda, he had some people on his side, and the rest of Israel had taken King Saul's son as king. And there was a war, and David HaMelech was winning, and finally, the other side, the chief general from the other side, Avner ben Ner, sent word to David HaMelech, "I'm joining your side. That's it. I'm with you." So David said, "Okay, we'll make peace." So now, let's think about where David's holding. He had married into King Saul's family, and King Saul tried to kill him. He had run, and King Saul tried to kill him. He had run, and King Saul had surrounded him and sent spies after him. Finally, he thought, "I can't make it in Israel." He ran out to Philistine territory. They tried to kill him there. He came back to the land of Israel to discover that his parents and siblings and everyone was killed. And finally, he's accepted as king. King Saul dies, and the rest of Israel joins the other side. They're all fighting against David. And now, after years of suffering, after years of being on the run, the general of Abner ben Ner is the general, and he's telling him, I'll join you. I'm willing to bring over all the Jewish people to your side. David should have said, sure, come on in. David doesn't say that. David says, when I was on the run, Shaul HaMelech took my first wife, he has other wives since then, he took my first wife, and he gave her to someone else, to Palti ben Laish. If you want to make peace with me, give me back my wife. Then we have what to talk about. So he's putting his whole kingship, he's putting his right to the throne on the line, and he's saying, first give me my wife, and then I'm willing to make peace and be king over the rest of Israel.
I hear.
I still think there's a very deep message in that. That's what he's thinking about when Avner sends him word. He says, send me back my first wife. And that wasn't even the wife he had chosen initially. That was like the wife that King Saul gave him as payback when his first wife was taken, and before he could marry her, she was given to someone else. So we're holding Rav Eliyahu Kitov's. I don't know. Right now, I'm not in the farm industry anymore. I could try to get it, but I don't remember. How much did I get it for? I don't remember. What? I don't remember.
Anyway, worth the buy. Don't lose money, whatever you pay.
We were in the process of discussing peace and the importance of shalom, which is also relevant to our parsha. Chazal tell us that in the land of Israel, when there was a fight between two families, so everyone would look to see who gave in first. And whoever gave in first, they'd say, he has better yichus, he comes from a better family. They didn't look to see who won the fight. They looked to see who gave in first. The Gemara tells us that a person should always be the one to give in within his home. Our sages taught us, Heve anav lechol adam, be modest with regard to every man, ve'le'anshei beit chayu tel mikol adam, and to the people in your home more than every man. Usually when a person comes home, he wants to say, I made this deal today, I told him off. No, our sages told us the exact opposite. A person should be modest towards everyone and most modest in his home. Our sages taught us, Afal pi sh'amru chachamim shlosha dvarim tzeich adam lomar betoch beto erev shabbat im chashecha. Even though a person has a responsibility Friday afternoon to check that things were taken care of. He has to check that the food, maaser, was taken off. He has to ask his wife, Isaltim, did we take off maaser? Did we remember to take off challah off the challah? That's your responsibility, guys. Notice, it doesn't say that comes to the Shabbos table and he eats, and then his wife tells him, oh, I forgot to take off maaser. And he says, you forgot again? I don't understand. You're feeding me non-kosher food? No. The Gemara said, no. It's his responsibility Friday afternoon to make sure to ask, was maaser taken off? He's not the one taking off the maaser. She is, right? That's the obvious implication. He's asking her, did you? But he's supposed to ask when there's still time to do it. I often tell chatanim, in the laws of family purity, there are certain times that it's critical that a woman does certain things in order for the family, for the couple to be permissible. So I get a phone call almost every month from a couple that the wife forgot. So the first thing I tell the husband is, it's your responsibility, not hers. Well, I mean, she has to take care of these things. No. It's true that she has to take care of them, but you have to remind her. You see, from this halacha, that even though she's the one that's taking off the miser, he's supposed to be asking her, hey, did you take off the miser? When there's still time to fix it. Not to come to the Shabbos table and then realize that it wasn't taken care of and then be upset. No. Our sages taught us he's supposed to ask, Geravtem, did we prepare the Erev? Are we ready so we could carry on Shabbos? And then he's supposed to say, Adliku et haner, it's time, let's light the Shabbos candles. There, she's going to light the Shabbos candles, not him. Our sages said that the husband is supposed to prepare the Shabbos candles for his wife. He's the one that's supposed to be preparing them for her. Our sages said, this is a Mishnah. We say it every Shabbos, Bamim Adlikim. The husband is supposed to ask these three things on Erev Shabbos. So a person can be nervous. we have to take care. No, it's a Mishnah. So say kid come home nervous and ask, what did you take off Meiser? Did you check the Heksher where you bought the fruits and vegetables? Or next year was Shemitah, it's even more serious. Sages said no. Even though it's your responsibility to check your wife that she did these things, you have to say them calmly. You have to say them in a manner that she'll feel comfortable answering you. Very often when we have, especially people who do tshuva, so there's a certain imbalance. Meaning if a person grows up where he knows how to lead a Jewish life, so it's second nature to him. There are things that are understood. And when a person enters it and it's new to him, and even if a person's been doing it since he's 19 or 18 or 16, it's still relatively new. There's a certain aspect where it's not yet second nature. And therefore, sometimes there's a tendency to be extra nervous about things. So our sages taught us that people sometimes err, and they think that if they want their home to be more God-fearing, then they should apply pressure, right? Did you check the heksher on that you bought? Did you remember to check the rice before you served it? There's a famous story about a guy who merited to have his Rosh Hashiva come to him for a meal for Shabbos, and they had 7 kids, and they come to the door and they're about to knock, and they hear such a ruckus going on inside. So the guy waits a minute and he tries to prolong the conversation with the Rosh Hashiva. Finally he knocks on the door. He knows the halacha, you're not supposed to enter even your own home without knocking. And finally he opens the door and they walk in and everything's balagan. Fine. He helps out a little bit, they get ready, they come to the table, it's time to make Kiddush, and he's so embarrassed, the cup of wine is filled, but his wife forgot to bring the cover for the challahs to the table. So what the Rosh Hashiva is going to think, I don't know that you need a cover for the challahs. So he calls his wife, he says, honey, you forgot the cover for the challahs, we can't make a Kiddush without the cover for the challahs. So she says, oh, you're right, I'm sorry, I forgot. She runs, she brings the cover, she puts the cover on the challahs. Come Sunday morning, the Rosh Hashiva calls the guy over and he tells him, you know, about that cover on the challahs on Shabbos, why do we put cover on the challahs? So the guy thinks for a second and he says, because we're not supposed to embarrass the challahs that we're making Kiddush on the wine instead of the challahs. Yeah.
Embarrassing your wife.
Right. So you guys got the hint. Very often when we want to be careful about keeping mitzvot, so the easiest way to do it, the simplest thing to do is to be nervous about it. So a person can apply pressure in his home. And Chazal told us that that's the surest way to ensure that the home will not be a God-fearing home. That if a person applies pressure in his home, then what's going to happen is his wife will lie to him. She's going to be pressured. He says everything has to be ready for Shabbos. So he's going to come home and it's going to be 5 minutes before candle lighting. He's going to say, is everything ready? So she won't say, I need your help. Take care of that. No, we don't have it ready. She's going to say, yeah. And if the chicken isn't ready and she forgot to put the chicken on the platter, well, if he comes home and the chicken isn't ready for the meal, so he's going to be upset. So even though it's 5 minutes into Shabbos, she'll throw the chicken on the platter. And even though maybe she didn't get to light the candles on time, so she'll light it 2 minutes after she's allowed to, not she's supposed to. Chazal said when a person applies pressure in his home, that's a surefire way to ensure his home will not be a God-fearing home. The Gemara gives a story to illustrate. Hillel HaNasi, the great Hillel, once came home with an important guest. And they were sitting down for the meal, and his wife said, I'll go get the food. So they're sitting. And they're sitting, and an hour passes, and 2 hours pass, and after 3 hours, she comes out with the food. So they came home for lunch. They weren't planning on sitting there waiting 3 hours for the food. Finally, she comes out with the food, and it took her as much time as it would take to prepare the food from scratch. So Hillel tells her, Biti, which was the term that Chazal used when they were saying, my beloved. What happened that it took a little bit longer this time than usual to prepare the food? So she says, well, I had all the food ready when you guys sat down. And I went to the kitchen, and a poor man came knocking on the door, and he said he was hungry, he had to eat. So I gave him the meal, and then I started, and I prepared everything from scratch. So he blessed her. And the Gemara says, we learned from Hillel how modest he was. That his wife wasn't nervous he'd be upset. If his wife would have been nervous that he'd be upset that she gave away his lunch to the poor man, and it took her 3 hours to prepare the food, she wouldn't have given that poor man the food. But Hillel was such a modest person that in his own house, his wife felt comfortable to take his lunch and the guest's lunch and have them sitting there waiting for 3 hours while she prepares everything from scratch and then brings it before him. That's a lesson to all of us in how, if we want our home to be a God-fearing home, the Gemara says we have to behave like Hillel, that our wives feel comfortable. And of course, part of it is giving trust, that we're not looking over their shoulder and checking, but rather we're there to help. Is this ready? Can I help? Chazal said that the Gemara gives a list of all the rabbis, each one what his job was Friday afternoon. This one would go collect the firewood. This one would cut the onion. This one would dice the salad. This one would clean up here. Every rabbi did their thing. Gemara says, well, what's mean here? Every rabbi didn't have, why weren't they learning? Gemara says, everyone has to help in preparing for Shabbos. Everyone with his own body has to help. And the post command that nowadays, if you're going to come home and you're going to expect that the house is going to be ready for Shabbos and you're not sweating and preparing, chances are it's not ready for Shabbos. It's interesting that when I speak to couples in the Sheva Brachas, so I often say the same speech. Maybe I could think of a new one, but I think this one's just as relevant to everyone. So one of the examples I tell them is that everyone has dreams. And one of the dreams that everyone, I think, shares is that Friday afternoon will be calm and tranquil. And we'll enter the Shabbos with tranquility. And it's funny that whenever I give this example, I see the couple looking into one another's eyes. They're in Sheva Brachas. They still believe it's going to work. So I wish everyone that it'll work. You should all try. But the poskim in Shulchan Aruch say that we have to be aware that as much as we want it, somehow when Shabbos enters at 4, then we're nervous up until 4, and there's a mad rush right before 4. When Shabbos enters at 7:30, like now, so there's a mad rush till 7:30, till Shabbos enters. And there's an explanation to it, which we'll discuss a different time. Yeah?
So you're going to have not to respond to when, let's say she forgets twice, she knows he won't be upset, so she, after waiting a couple minutes after Shabbos, she said, oh, I'm sorry, it was a big problem. I should have done better, but I really messed up. And it happens once or twice. So how should we respond?
So a good example would be, to tell a kol kavod, I'm so proud of you. That's amazing that you held yourself and you contained yourself and you didn't do it. Think about it. Put yourself in her shoes for a minute. It's not so easy. It's very easy to sit on our end when we're expecting something, but when you know the other side is going to be disappointed, and it's not only that, God created men and women in a way that a woman spends much of her time waiting for his compliment and waiting for his show of affection, and I don't want to use the word approval, but approval is the minimum. He has to show appreciation way beyond approval. And if you're living your life and you're investing everything you can for the kids and the family and the home, and then you forgot to put the chicken on the plata. There's cold chicken for Friday night. You forgot to heat up the chiln. So now the Shabbos morning, you're either going to eat cold chiln or not at all. So it's a pretty big disappointment for the person himself. And if you can come in and say, wow, kol kavod, that your fear of God precedes your fear of wanting to do what's so-called right, or getting it all down pat. So you're strengthening her so that next time she'll do that too. And in truth, you should view it that way. That's the true approach. I mean, what are we both doing here? What's the chont for? The chont is a way of honoring Shabbos, which is a way of honoring Hashem. So yeah, God said we should enjoy Shabbos, but that's the whole point of what we're doing here. So that is the true approach, no? But why not give positive feedback? I remember, I told the story I think many times. It was the 8th candle of Hanukkah, and it was Friday afternoon, and there was almost no one in yeshiva. Shabbos, Hanukkah, everyone goes away. My parents are in America, so I have nowhere to go. So I'm in yeshiva. So I go down and I'm learning the Beis Medrash, and then I think I'll go back to my room to light candles. But when I want to go back to light candles, someone in the Beis Medrash says, no, I need your help setting up the menorah for shul. So I help him setting up the menorah for shul. And then I want to go light candles, and he says, no, there's no one here to be chazan. You daven for the amud. So I daven for the amud, and I finish mincha, and I run back to the room, and I have my candles ready. I'm ready to light Hanukkah candles. It's the last night, 8 candles. And I run in, and I say, wait a second, let me look at a clock. So I had a guest, a guy who also had nowhere to go for Shabbos. So he was staying in the room with me, and I asked him, what's the time? So he tells me the time. I said, I'm okay. So he tells me, what do you mean okay? I said, okay, I'm not going to light Hanukkah candles this year. The eighth night I won't light. So he says, what do you mean? It's let's say Shkia was 45. So he said, it's 43. What do you want? So I said, yeah, 43 is a time when we don't know if it's Shkia or not. If I light a candle, that's a biblical prohibition. If I light my Hanukkah candles, that's a rabbinic mitzvah. I'm not allowed to do a biblical prohibition to maybe perform a rabbinic mitzvah. So he says, so you won't light Hanukkah candles tonight? You're going to miss the eighth night? So I don't have a choice. What can I do? Yeah, I'm going to miss the eighth night. What can I do? What's the alternative? Yeah, I felt like 2 cents. I almost struck the match. Like I was holding my striking the match. It was so convincing. It was like, you're going to miss the last night? Yeah, what does God want me to do? He doesn't want me to light those 8 candles now. It might be Shabbos already. I can't. So it's not so easy. We're very often in situations where we think it is, but in truth it isn't. Our sages taught us, and we saw it 2 weeks ago in the parasha, whenever a person gets angry, if he's a wise man, he loses his wisdom. If he's a prophet, he loses his prophecy. And we're going to see it in this week's parasha, next week's parasha by Moshe Rabbeinu. Our sages taught us that anger in the home is like a worm within sesame seeds, that it eats away at the home. And our sages taught us that peace in the home is so great that God said, you can erase my name to ensure that there's peace in the home. That's the concept of sota. Our sages taught us, mutar lishanot mipnei shalom. One is allowed to say things a little differently for the sake of peace in the home. Ordinarily, a person has to be always speaking the truth. But if it's something that's going to cause a problem in Shalom Bayis, our sages said that for that, one may change the truth. Chizkiya omer, Chizkiya Torah, Gadol HaShalom, peace is so great that when it comes to every mitzvah, the Torah describes it, if you bump into your enemy's ox or his donkey, so he helped him out. If you see your enemy's donkey laden and he's suffering, help him unload the donkey. If you happen across a bird, the mother over the children, if you happen across the mitzvot, the Torah describes the mitzvot as if you happen to come across them. But when it comes to peace, what does the Torah teach us? Bakesh shalom v'radfeu. One has to seek out peace. One has to chase after peace. One has to be proactive. Peace, sometimes people get confused because they see religious Jews saying that we have to do all kinds of things today politically. And the truth is that peace is at the forefront of Jewish philosophy. We only believe that, many people believe, that the only way to attain true peace is in certain circumstances to use force. But at the end of the day, what we're seeking is peace. Our sages taught us that when Elio is going to come to us, Elio is going to know that this guy's a mamzer, and that guy, he's not even Jewish, and the other guy's going to know all the secrets about everyone. But Elio won't tell the secrets, because Elio is going to come, Hinei Anochi Sholeach Lachem Et Eliyahu HaNavi, Ve'eshiv Levavot Al Banim, he'll make the fathers at peace with the children, Ve'lev Banim Al Avotam, he's going to make the children at peace with the fathers. Elio is coming to bring peace to the world. So our Torah teaches us that even when we go to fight our enemies, when we're going to war against a non-Jewish country, the first thing we have to do is greet them with peace. May we merit to bring peace between ourselves and Bezat Hashem within all of Am Yisrael and especially within our homes.
Amen.
Hada tov.